May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Please be seated. I don't know about you, but I always, can I use the word hate, maybe dislike, when someone says, well, I know what you're thinking. Because truthfully, sometimes I don't know what I'm thinking, and how can they know? So I won't do that to you today. I will not say I know what you're thinking. I will say instead, I can guess what some of you are thinking. It goes something like this. Oh, David, the devil thing. You're going to talk about the devil thing? That's a myth. Don't you know that? And the truth is that the closest we get to that myth sometimes is buying deviled ham at Kroger's with the little red guy on the can. And, you know, it is funny to think about. And actually, you can explain Satan that way, biblically, that Satan is a symbol for the spirit of evil that arises out of this world. Trevor Ling, an Anglican theologian, wrote a wonderful little book, 40 years ago, I suppose, The Significance of Satan, in which that's exactly what he argued. And I read that book as a seminarian and thought, now I can get into that. However, there are a few things that happen in the world that have happened in my experience in working with people and places that I have a hard time explaining if Satan is not a real presence in the world. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm kind of into Trevor Ling, that Satan is a wonderful mythical symbol for evil. Evil is real, but it's a spirit of evil that arises out of this world, and Satan symbolizes it. And on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, I'm not so sure about that. Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. And on Sunday, I don't think about it very much. And I think it's wise that we don't pontificate too much about what's in the unseen world since we can't see it. So I think a kind of openness is a good thing, actually. C.S. Lewis, in that wonderful little humorous book, The Screwtape Letters, in the introduction makes this statement. There are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased by both errors and hail a materialist or a magician with the same delight. So enough of that to caution us not to be so sure we know about whether the devil is real or not. In today's gospel, Jesus is baptized and then immediately is tempted. And that should send up a smoke signal for all of us about our lives. My sermon today, if I had real courage, I'd just say these two sentences and sit down. But I will elaborate on them a little bit. There's two things. Baptism can get you in a lot of trouble. And spiritual disciplines can get you in a lot of trouble, like prayer and fasting. It shouldn't be lost on us that the text says after Jesus was baptized, he was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted. Now that's a lot in one sentence, isn't it? But his baptism, the next immediate thing was that the Spirit took him into a place where he would be tempted and did it for that reason, so that he would be tempted. Would you hand me a prayer book? I've got to bring that over. Stealing yours instead. In the Book of Common Prayer, I encourage you to look with me at page 300 and... Hold on. Page 302. In the baptismal service, those being baptized, or if infants, their sponsors, are asked, do you renounce Satan and all the spiritual forces of wickedness that rebel against God? Now, why is that in the baptismal service? Right there. Matthew 4, 1 to 11, that's why. Because there's a connection between new commitment and resistance. Jesus made a new commitment, and he was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted. Now, we don't know what those temptations took. Maybe they were visions. We don't know if they were actual conversations with a bodily being. Probably not, because Jesus gets moved around a lot, doesn't he? He's in the wilderness, and then he's on the mountaintop, and then he's on the pinnacle of the temple. So these are obviously visions. But on the heels of baptism, the Spirit takes him into a tempting place. Now, it was exactly because of who Jesus was that he was tempted. He was God's Son. And it's exactly because of who we are that we are tempted. If we didn't have any values or any beliefs or any commitments, we wouldn't be dealing with temptation, would we? It's because of who we are. And what we must face is that the Spirit of God will lead us into places where our conflict with evil will get worse. I think people sometimes come into the church because something's wrong in their lives and they're looking for a quick fix. Well, making a fresh commitment to God may not be the quick fix you're looking for, because it can get you in more trouble. What happens is really interesting, I think. We make a fresh commitment to God like holy baptism, but there's something inside of us that doesn't like that very much. A part of us, our lower self, if you will, that pushes against the light and pushes against God's love and pushes against commitment. And we make a fresh commitment, especially during Lent, for example, and those things in us that resist it will get more crystallized and more powerful. And then the cosmic forces of the universe will resist us. Life will get more complicated, not less. That's what happened to Jesus, is it not? Life got more complicated, not less. Gregory Orr, the Virginia poet who's taught English at UVA for a long time, wrote a little poem about it. The poem is entitled, "The Entrance to the Underworld." A common enough mistake, looking in the wrong place. It's not a fissure in the earth or crack in a cliff face that leads sharply down. You were looking in the wrong world. It was inside you, entrance to that cavern deeper than hell. So what do we do? Do we believe this, that the real conflict is down in here? If we embrace that and understand it, then we're better prepared for what happens when we make new commitments, that something inside of us and forces around us are going to resist our commitment. And what we have to do is embrace that and be honest that we are more than oneself, so to speak. And the spiritual disciplines can get you in a lot of trouble too. Notice the text says that Jesus was fasting for 40 days and 40 nights, and afterwards he was famished, and afterwards the devil came. Now we can assume that 40 days, that he took in some minimal nourishment and some minimal fluids, but he was fasting and he was very hungry. And it was in the middle of that he was tempted. You know, I think we have this illusion sometimes that if we get closer to God and God's Spirit is more fully active in our lives, that we're less vulnerable to evil. It's not how it worked for Jesus, is it? After the fasting, he was really close to God in the desert. That's when the temptation got worst. If you raise the window at night, I love to sleep with windows up, don't you? In the spring when the breezes come in, you know, it's so refreshing. But that same window lets in the rain and the mosquitoes and the burglar. So if we make our lives more open to God and raise the window higher, we're also making ourselves more open to other forces in the spiritual world as well. We become more vulnerable, more open, not less. David Bolt put it this way once. Anyone who has ever tried to formulate a private prayer in silence and in their own heart will know what I mean by diabolical interference. The forces of evil are in opposition to the will of God, and the nearer a person's will approaches God's, the more apparent and stronger and more formidable this opposition is seen to be. It is only when we are going in more or less the same direction as the devil that we are unconscious of any opposition at all. Did you get that last sentence? It is only when we are going in more or less the same direction as the devil that we are unconscious of any opposition at all. So you're probably, I don't know what you're thinking. I'm guessing that some of you are thinking, well, what is he trying to tell me? Don't do anything special for Lent. Don't make new commitments. Well, if you don't want conflict and difficulty and adversity in your life more than you've got now, don't make a new commitment. That's true. But if you take that road, you will have to live with a couple of realities. One reality is that you are not listening to your holiest desires, and you're ignoring the voice of your best self, and you're probably ignoring the voice of God in the process. And the other reality you'll have to live with is that you're living out of your worst, most fearful, weakest self. And is that the way you really want to live? So my suggestion, my encouragement today is to pray to God for holy daring and grit. Ask the Spirit, where are you trying to take me? And don't I have sense enough to know that that's the best thing I can do with myself? And give me the grit and holy daring I need to listen to my best self, to listen to my holiest desires, and to try to live them no matter what. So what if Satan kicks up his activity? So what if your lower self doesn't like it? Jesus was in the desert, wasn't he? He knows what it's like. And he is our brother. And he is our friend. And he will see us through. And we will have the satisfaction of knowing that we didn't wimp out on our commitments. Leonard Cohen, the Jewish poet and singer, wrote a song called The Anthem. And in that song, the chorus goes like this. Ring the bells that still can ring. Forget your perfect offering. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets through. Amen.